Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 50, recorded February 21st, 2011.
Whoa, the 50th episode.
It is!
That's momentous.
It's very cool.
So, we decided to celebrate, we're going to do something a little weird.
Well, it's not weird. People do it all the time. Give things away.
Well, not the same kinds of things.
Well, no, but our listeners will like it.
So, tell them what we're going
to
do.
Okay. The first person to either send us an email or call us on the phone number will...
After we release this podcast.
Yeah, after we release the podcast, can pick either a starter culture of microworms, banana worms, or vinegar eels. For free.
We'll send it to you postage paid, first class, free.
So free worms!
For your baby fish or whatever, you know.
Yeah, start your own culture.
Yeah. Well, of course, you have to start your own culture because it'll be a starter culture.
Yes.
It won't be a ready-to-feed culture.
Right.
But if you want one of those, then you can, you know, send
so
us an email.
So first person.
You can't, Twitter or Facebook don't count. It has to be either directly to email or it has to be a phone message.
Mm-hmm. And the information for those is on the groovy little message in the middle of the podcast, so
Yeah. Listen
for that. Okay, now, last time we were responding to Andreka's questions, and we didn't quite finish that.
No, I was kind of losing my voice because I was sick, mm-hmm. and I think I was a little foggy in the head, so I don't think I covered everything, but we will attempt to more fully address some of her valid questions this time.
Before we do that, though, you wanted to tell us something about the brine shrimp and the opaiula.
Yes, I mentioned last week that I just sort of as an afterthought put some brine shrimp with the opaiula. They were newly hatched brine shrimp, and they began to thrive, and I didn't expect that. I expect they would just be eaten by the opaiula. And there was a very high survival rate. That initial rate has dropped some. They are growing, they're metamorphosing, but the numbers have dropped quite a bit. I'm thinking that might partly be due to our cat.
We have a funny cat. Okay, I have to explain about the cat. He's very picky about his water dishes. His food and his water bowl are in the bathroom, because if they were in the kitchen, they would just get kicked around all day and spill. So they're in the bathroom. He's fine with eating in there, although the funny thing is he doesn't like to eat by himself and he wants the light on, so he'll wait to eat until one of the kids goes in to actually go to the bathroom, and then he'll sit in front of them and eat, and then when they leave, he leaves the bathroom, but that's beside the point. He's a little quirky. He's just friendly. But he doesn't like to drink out of his water bowl in the bathroom, and we've tried different containers and different sizes of containers. He doesn't want to drink in the bathroom. And with all these fish tanks around the house, he can always find an alternative to drinking out of his own water bowl.
And most of them are covered, of course, but this particular opaiula tank is not covered, and he jumped up on the shelf, and, well, I shouldn't say he jumped up. He jumps up on the shelf to drink out of it. It's crazy. I can't think that that would be healthy.
It's brackish water.
And it's very slightly brackish water, but still.
But it's still brackish.
And he drinks out of it, and I can't keep him off the shelf. He jumps all the way up there and gets into it. So maybe
he's drinking up some of the baby marine shrimp.
Well, I don't know if he's drinking it or he's introducing something in the water that could be bad for them or something. But he is, I mean, a lot of the water's leaving.
I kind of wonder if he's going, great, shrimp-flavored water.
But he's certainly an extraneous variable in this situation, so I can't tell whether or not he's influencing it. But I'll have to do some more controlled trials in a more scientific way.
Feline-free environment.
Yes, before we determine anything about this situation. But there are still quite a few of them that are surviving and doing well with these low salinities, so that's interesting.
We have a new video up.
Yeah, and if you noticed on Twitter or YouTube or Facebook, it's all there already. It's been there for about a day. This is just a very, very short clip of my office betta, known as Abraham, or Beat Up the Whole World, depending on who you're talking to. And he was just flaring for the camera, and I took a short shot of that, so check that out.
And we found some groovy beta music.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for that.
Okay, tell us about the Brissano's fry feeder.
Okay.
The assassin snail feeder.
Yes, I did mention something about this before, but basically it's a bottle with holes. It's a like a drink water bottle, the kind you buy, the disposable sort that can be recycled. I drilled a few holes in the bottom for drainage, and then about an inch and a half up from the bottom, I cut some holes with a razor blade that are about a quarter to a half an inch rectangular holes, several of them. And then I used some fishing line to loop around the lid so it's easy to recover. And there it is. It's a bristlenose fry feeder or an assassin snail feeder, and I'm sure it could work for other things to feed them too. But the basic issue is baby bristlenoses are not very competitive feeders in a lot of tanks, and assassin snails are not the most competitive feeders in a lot of tanks either. So I put food inside of there, and the baby bristlenoses or the assassin snails, depending on the food, if I put like green beans in there, the baby bristlenoses come, and if I put frozen cubes of mussels in there, then the assassin snails come. And they'll climb into there, but the adult bristlenoses or other fish in the tank can't get in there and take all the food. It's seems to be working quite well. I got several bristlenoses out of my 55, baby bristlenoses, and that way moved them to another tank and then fed them for several days in there, which seemed to give them a great start because they got a lot of food early on, which seems to be important. And that seems kind of logical that it would be, but It's worked well. Once I got them started after a week or so eating in there, then I released them. They're doing fine in the tank, grazing and finding food easily now. So it seems to be working also for the assassin snails with the mussels. It also kind of doubles as a trap, but it's not as effective as some traps because they do seem to find their way out eventually. But if you see several of them in there, you can just pull on the fishing line and take them out, and I transferred, like I said, several fish that way. And right now, if I wanted to, I could pull several assassin snails out of the tank. So, because they're feeding on some mussels about 3 feet away from me. So there you go. I do need to put a photo or something up of the trap, not trap, of the feeder and how it works and so on.
Put that in the resources.
See if I can put one of those on the podcast resources page, but I haven't taken any pictures yet that came out. So we'll see
about
that.
We'll keep trying.
Yeah.
Okay, so we need to finish answering Andreka's questions about cycling.
Yeah, she herself said something about what are the downfalls of new aquarists, what can get in the way, and I think we did mention something about cycling, but we didn't really get into it that much. So I wanted to start by talking out about the basics of cycling really quick. I'm not going to get really fancy or wax chemistry or anything like that, but just really basic.
Okay, well, tell us the basics then.
Okay, well, fish excrete ammonia as a waste product both through their gills and also through their
digestive tract.
Yeah, through their digestive tract.
It's
and
more delicate.
Way. Also, uneaten food breaks down into several things, and one of the major components of that uneaten food that breaks down is ammonia. So, a byproduct of keeping aquatic critters is ammonia. And ammonia is very toxic. It interferes with respiration. And so it will kill fish in large quantities, and it will stress them in lower quantities. If there's any detectable ammonia in the system, that's a bad thing for fish. So the lovely thing is, eventually, bacteria will build up in the system that will break down that ammonia to something known as nitrite. And nitrite is nearly as toxic as ammonia, unfortunately. However, at that point, a third group of bacteria that can tolerate nitrite but can't tolerate ammonia will show up and turn the nitrite into nitrate, which is still not good for fish, but they can handle much larger quantities of it than they can either ammonia or nitrite. And it's also fairly easy to remove from the system. Three ways you can remove nitrate from the system. One is water changes, and that's a great way. If you're doing somewhere between 20 and 50% water change once or twice a week, somewhere in there, you're reducing nitrate significantly, and that's a good thing. That will help keep things under control. If you have lots of healthy, hungry plants in the tank, that will significantly reduce nitrate. And in fact, that can also just go directly to the ammonia, because plants will absorb ammonia preferentially, but we're not going to get into that, I guess. But basically, you can keep that byproduct from building up in a system by having a lot of healthy plants in the tank. And then finally, certain bacteria can take nitrate and turn it into nitrogen gas, and then it'll just bubble out into the atmosphere. But you need some certain special conditions for that, like a high amount of surface area and a low amount of oxygen, and sometimes
oxygen
several other
in
things.
In the tank?
In
the water?
In the place where the bacteria are. So if you have...
Are the bacteria in the water?
They're in the water, but they're usually in some sort of medium that, like a big chunk of lava, for example, where they're in the interior of the rock where there's not much oxygen, but they can still take the nitrate that's floating through down into that part of the rock and change it to nitrogen.
So would you get those bacteria just in any chunk of lava rock that you go by, or do you have to get them specially somehow?
They wouldn't necessarily start there, but they would probably eventually colonize it, but it might take a while before they did.
So they're kind of hard to get on purpose?
It's not so much that they're that hard to get as long as you provide the right media. It's just they take a while to build up, and you do have to make sure you have those certain conditions. You have to have a large surface area and a low amount of oxygen.
Surface area of the rock or of the water surface?
Of whatever surface they are on, and they can't be in direct contact with a lot of oxygen.
Okay.
So that's kind of a more specialized topic that maybe we'll get into sometime. But water changes. For beginners, water changes. That's how that goes. They will help you get rid of that nitrate. Now, that's the basic cycle. If you put fish in a tank, they'll immediately start producing ammonia. In a few days, if nothing is there to reduce that ammonia or change it into something else, pretty soon you're going to have fish that are stressed. They're going to be uncomfortable, they're going to have difficulty breathing, and so on.
It's kind of like if you went in the bathroom to clean the bathroom and you shut all the windows and the doors and you opened a bottle of bleach with ammonia and you just kept breathing it.
Well, I mean, bleach and ammonia together would be worse.
But just, I mean, not literally like that, but just,
yeah,
you know.
I know what you mean. Yeah. If you open a bottle of ammonia, you notice how stressful it is to just try to breathe that stuff. And it's something analogous to that for fish as well. So it will eventually lead to their death if it's not taken care of. And so, and if the concentration is high enough. So this is what a lot of people have done over the years, and many pet stores suggest this. They say, buy a couple of tough fish that can survive this heightened ammonia in the water. Just a small number of fish, get a couple of them, make sure they're tough, and they will live through this phase where ammonia is high. They'll live through the phase where nitrate is high, and then finally when ammonia is all turned to nitrite and nitrite is all turned to nitrate by the bacteria, those fish will be fine, and then you can add more fish to the tank because those bacteria are doing the work. That is possible, and that's what a lot of pet stores say, but it's actually possible to deal with this situation without stressing out the fish.
Okay, so let's talk about fishless cycling.
Yeah, basically ammonia is the key ingredient to getting these bacteria to come. So what I like to do when I'm setting up a new tank, if it's at all possible, and in certain cases it's not, but when it is, I like to do a fishless cycle by getting another source of ammonia, adding it to the tank, waiting until those bacteria have colonized the tank and have begun to metabolize that ammonia and turn it into nitrite and then nitrate without any fish. And by the time they're doing that, you can add fish, and they don't have to deal with all this ammonia in the water.
So other sources of ammonia could be what?
Well, you can get just pure ammonia. If you go to the dollar store, at least around here, you can go get a bottle of pure ammonia with nothing else added. It is important to make sure nothing else added, because if you got detergents in there or something,
you'd
that's a
fish.
Serious issue. Yeah, that'd kill the fish. That's even worse than ammonia, or at least just as bad. So you can make sure it's just pure ammonia.
How much would you put in, like, say, per gallon?
It would be a very small amount. You could just put in enough so that it registers on your test kit. And just, you know, put in a few drops and test, and then keep going like that until it registers on your test kit, depending on the size of your tank. But I guess we're going to have to talk about that after the break.
This isn't a commercial. because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it? And we're back.
Okay. Well, and to tell you, I actually prefer to use fish food. And so I don't know what to tell you for exact measurements as far as ammonia goes. But I just use a pinch of fish food every day.
And just put it in there and it'll break down and turn into ammonia.
Yeah, it'll produce other things as well as ammonia, but there'll be enough ammonia there that you can get those bacteria to start working. And then you just use a test kit. After you've done that for a week or so, put an ammonia test kit in there and see what you've got. And then just test every day or every couple of days until ammonia starts registering at zero. And when it does, that means the bacteria started to turn it into nitrite. So you can do a nitrite test and watch that until it goes to zero. And when it goes to zero, and as long as your ammonia is still at zero, your tank is cycled. And now nitrate is building up in the system, and you can start doing partial water changes, like 20%.
So you don't want to change the water until it gets to that point?
You can change a little bit of it.
But it'll take the bacteria out too?
Yeah, and not so much that it'll take the bacteria out, because the bacteria are on surfaces.
Okay.
But it will reduce the ammonia, and that's what they're eating, so you know, you don't want to mess with it too much. You could change a little bit of water if you wanted to, but basically you don't need to do the water changes while you're trying to get that ammonia to build up. But once you have got the bacteria to turn it into nitrates, then you do need to start doing the water changes to reduce those nitrates.
Okay. So now, the test kits you can just get at the normal pet store.
Yeah. Yeah, and some are more reliable than others, and if you have a really old one on the shelf, you know, you don't want to use that. But this is mostly for new aquarists anyway, because experienced aquarists already know this stuff.
Is there a brand that you like the best, or is it just make sure that it's not too old?
Well, I think in most cases you get what you pay for to some degree, but if you have and the strips, the paper strips that test for like six different things, I don't think are necessarily as reliable as a kit that's made specifically to test one parameter of water.
Okay.
But I think for these purposes, if ammonia's showing up on your kit and then it's not, that's probably good enough for most cases. And then nitrite is showing up on your kit and then it's not, that's probably good enough, I would guess. And it seems to work okay. Another possibility, but I wouldn't really recommend this for beginning aquarists, but if a seasoned aquarist is doing a fishless cycle that they haven't done it before, you can just keep going until you notice that the tank has popped or has cycled.
What do you mean, popped?
Well, that's another way to say it's cycled, basically, okay. That the bacteria have gone through the system. And one, there are lots of indicators that you start to recognize. One of them is that suddenly algae starts to grow in the tank.
That's usually that means it's cycled?
That it is cycled. It's not a perfectly reliable sign, though. But if you waited long enough and it starts, you know, you start seeing algae and things like that, then it's probably cycled and you're probably okay. But once again, I think a beginner should rely on the results of a test kit to make sure.
Okay. Now tell us about softening the cycle.
And softening the cycle would be one way to put it. You could also just say easing the cycle or whatever. But basically a way to make the cycle easier on your fish and easier on you. There are several ways to do that. One is to pick up some bacterial or enzymatic additives.
From the pet store?
The pet store, right. There are on the market quite a few additives that are supposed to make a cycle easier by either adding bacteria to the system that will begin, you know, it's kind of a jump start, rather than waiting for the bacteria to just colonize through the air or whatever. You're adding larger numbers of them, and that gets it started.
So it gets it started faster.
Yeah, right. And then there are some enzymes that will break down some of these wastes that you can also use, and they will help make the cycle a little gentler until the bacteria are there, the enzymes that are kind of doing the job of the bacteria. And some are a mix of both. And then there are other additives, like Emquel, for example, or Prime, that will chemically react with ammonia and nitrite in ways that make it so that the bacteria can come in and use them, but it doesn't allow the ammonia to attack the fish. So it basically detoxifies the ammonia, but still it's available in the system for the bacteria to come and get it, and that can make it a lot more gentle on fish. Basically, ammonia is a really small molecule, so it's easy to get into the fish's body. But if you add these other molecules to it, it's too big to get into the fish's body, but it's not not unavailable to the bacteria, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So it's kind of like you're chaining it down and making it so the bacteria can come and get it. So several of those substances can help make the cycle a little easier on you and your fish. Another way would be to add some material with lots of surface area from an established tank, because, of course, as we've said before, surface area is the key to almost any biological question, if you just know how to get there. So lots of surface area means lots of places for these bacteria, because the bacteria that metabolize ammonia and nitrite require a surface. They need to sit on a surface to do their job and to reproduce.
They don't just float around in the water column.
And some of them do, but they don't do their job very efficiently while they're doing that. I mean, they need to eventually adhere to a surface to be really comfortable in doing what they're supposed to be doing. So they're called lithotrophic bacteria. They stick on stones. It's kind of they eat stones is sort of what it means, but basically it means they are attached to something and they do their job from there. So surface area, like gravel. You can take some gravel from an established healthy tank. Healthy is important there, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure it's a healthy tank if you're going to take gravel. Or filter medium, like a filter pad from a healthy established aquarium, even if it's dirty. If you put it in your tank and you start running it in your tank...
In the filter,
there will be bacteria that will colonize your tank more quickly. Another way to do it, if you know you're going to be setting up a tank, before you even set it up, you can get your filter and set it up on a friend's tank. If they have a healthy established tank that's been going for a while and it's healthy, you just set up your tank, your filter, and plug it in their tank and have it hitchhike and just run.
It'll pick up some of those
bacteria.
There.
It'll pick up some of the bacteria, and then if it's done that for a couple of weeks, you can set up your tank, dechlorinate your water, and then hook that filter on, and that will help get it going. Anything like that can really help ease the transition from during the process of cycling.
Okay. So those are all good ways to kind of seed the tank to get it started faster.
Yeah. And that is probably the worst problem. Cycling the tank is probably the worst problem that beginners encounter. One problem with it is that you can have a crystal clear tank because the filter is pulling all the particulate matter from the water, and the activated carbon is keeping funky colors from showing up in the water. So the water column can be totally clear, and you wonder why your fish are stressed, or you wonder why your fish are dying. And that's what it is. And so a lot of beginners are turned off from the hobby because they bring fish to this crystal clear tank, and the fish die, and they go get new fish and put them in the tank, and they die. And they're wondering, what's going on? What's the mystery going on here? Mm-hmm. When really, all it is this...
chemistry.
Yeah, it's the ammonia in the water, which you can't see. And it's true that bacterial blooms will sometimes happen in the water that will make the water cloudy, but the water can be crystal clear and still be a highly toxic environment for your fish. So that would be one of the major pitfalls for a new aquarist.
Okay, so hopefully that helps you out, Andreka.
Yeah.
And everybody else who's starting to set up a tank.
Yes, and those of you who already know all this, thank you for hanging in there. And I know I can say that to you because if you're not hanging in there, you can't hear me, so it doesn't matter. But I think it's a good topic to address for
it's always good to have a refresher, too.
Yeah.
And
okay, so because it's our 50th podcast...
Yes, we're doing the giveaway, like we talked about in the beginning.
Yep, this is just a reminder.
So the first person, after we put this podcast up, to send us an email or a phone message and, you know, say this is for the giveaway, can get a free starter culture, postage included, of either microworms, Walta worms, banana worms, or vinegar eels.
Yes, and if you don't want any worms, but you still want to email us or send us a message, that's okay.
That's okay, too. That's,
just let us know. I already have them, or I don't need them, or whatever, and we won't send them to you, but just let us know.
Yes. We will not force worms upon anyone who does not wish them.
No, and if you live outside the continental United States, sorry, we can't do it.
Well, no.
Okay, other than that, I think we're about good as far as that goes. So we hope to hear from you, whether or not you want worms, we hope to hear from you.
Have a good week.
Very soon. And we do have lots of ways you can contact us, so please do. We depend on you. And we are having our next podcast after this one will be an interview with our friend Dave, the marine biologist.
So it's very cool.
We're pretty excited about that. So, later, folks. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.